as we get the local view. You can find his work as a columnist on the cover of the Register Guard sports section, like today. Catch up online, registerguard.com. Become a Twitter follower. Use the handle Austin Meek. It's our Tuesday leadoff man. Austin, how are you doing today?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good. I noticed your new Twitter avatar. Somebody told me that you were tearing it up at Mike Bellotti's golf tournament last week. Can you confirm that?
We had a nice little foursome together. Another media colleague of ours, Kristen Rogers of KEZI, a terrific golfer, by the way. Bogey-free, six birdies, an eagle. So we actually played some quality golf. Tearing it up, you spoke to an incredibly generous person.
So you were not the ringer on that team then?
No, no, no. I brought in Kristen and my buddy Detroit Bill, who are the ringers. Though I do feel like I shouldered my fair burden with some nice putts, good drives, green a par three, hit about a 220-yard three-wood to a par five to set us up. So, yeah, normally I rely on others. I definitely held up my end. Do you play at all?
You know, not anymore. I used to play a little bit, and occasionally I'll get into a scramble, but it's been a long time. I guarantee you I would not have pulled my weight. That's part of why I stopped. I felt bad just, you know, drafting off of everybody else whenever I would play a scramble, and I'd be the guy who would, like, make one lucky putt, and that was my contribution to the team, so I finally had to give it up.
I like how you say you used to, like, you know, you're older than me when you're, like, 22 years younger than me.
Back in my day.
Yeah, that's a classic one. So for the first time in your young life, you entered a Major League Baseball season with your team, the Royals, the defending champs. They started out hot, 1-8 of 10, and I see just, man, they've been all about the DL with Chris Young and Medlin and Moustakas. They're last in the AL in runs. Is this kind of the perfect storm of everything that went right the last 2 years going wrong now? Or when you consider all that, they're still right around 500 and just 5.5 out.
I think it's all of that. They definitely had a lot of good breaks add up in their favor the last 2 years. Maybe they're paying for that now, which, by the way, I'm completely okay with. I would much rather be the team that has one lucky year and then one really unlucky year than the team that, you know, is always right there on the cusp and can just never get a break to win it all. So I'm really zen about it now. You know, the fact that they won it last year, if they miss the playoffs this year, I can just savor those World Series memories and I'll be okay.
All right. Yeah, that's a deal with not with the devil. That's just a deal with the other 29 teams. I was listening to Bud Selig, the former commissioner. He was on WFAN, and the subject of his decision after the 2002 All-Star Game in his hometown that ended in a tie to award home field edge in the World Series. I thought that was just crazy, given an important value to an exhibition. So if you think back to when he made that decision, were you on board? Are you now? Have you evolved? Or you of the same opinion?
First of all, does anybody care what Bud Selig thinks about anything anymore? I mean, I think I've kind of moved on from Bud. I'm not sure I ever really was that interested in what Bud had to say, but especially not now, especially not about the All-Star Game. I'm of the staunch opinion that the All-Star Game is an exhibition. I don't get the home field advantage thing. I never liked it. I thought it was a big overreaction to 1 year when it ended in a tie, and then they had to suddenly make it affect who has a chance to win the World Series, which seemed crazy to me. So I was not a big fan of Bud Selig, and especially not on that particular matter.
All right, we're on the same page there. Obviously, everybody's chimed in on the most talked-about fight since Holly Holm knocked out Ronda Rousey. But over the weekend, Joey Bautista got plunked, tried to take out the Rangers' Rougned Odor at second. Odor would end up landing a solid right to his face. He got 8 games. So was it ridiculous for Texas to go after Joey Bats in his last at-bat? Was his slide out of line? Did Odor overreact? What's your read on all this and if the punishment fits the crime?
Well, as a Royals fan, I know that I should have about 2,000 reasons to dislike Jose Bautista and to enjoy the fact that he got lit up and got punched in the face. He's not my favorite baseball player by any stretch of the imagination. Some of the stuff he does is a little bit over the top. The bat flips, you know, it's not my thing. I don't feel strongly either way, but it's not really my thing. All that said, it's a part of me that kind of likes Jose Bautista. He's got that edge. You know, he's got an attitude that he plays with. He does amazing things at the plate. He hits the baseball a long, long ways. He's got kind of a cool story. You know, so many teams let him go. His career was basically in the gutter, and then he's become one of the best home run hitters of the last 5 or 10 years. So I don't despise the guy as much as a lot of people do. But that said, I saw the video on Twitter, and I got a little bit of satisfaction from it. I mean, if you can't enjoy one man punching another man in the face very hard, I'm not sure you're an American.
Nice. We're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. Moving to softball, you wrote about Sheridan Hawkins over the weekend. We had her on the week prior. I mean, I've seen her literally skip out to the circle. And I'm not really big on player interviews, but I became a real admirer of hers. But one of the things I found interesting that you wrote, for all of her joy of the game, she really wears her emotions on her sleeve. And in some ways, does that kind of wear on her?
Yeah, she's an interesting player, an interesting personality. I mean, she's been one of the, you know, I think one of the great athletes at the University of Oregon from the last few years. You know, somebody who really will go down in Oregon history as one of the all-time greats in her sport, I think. She's been a lot of fun to watch. She's been part of a really successful era, and I think part of why, why she's been kind of the face of that program is because she does really wear it. You know, she's an emotional player. She's passionate when she's on the field, and I think fans connect with that. But it is, you know, the thing I kind of wrote about with her is it's kind of a roller coaster at times. And she, you know, this year she had some times when she wasn't pitching real well, wasn't pitching up to her potential, and that was tough for her. And she really had to kind of work herself out of a funk at points this year. And you know, she was struggling with her command a little bit. It seems like she's gotten it back here down the stretch. She's put together a really good month to end the season. And Oregon is going to need that. You know, the whole thing for them now is can they get back to the College World Series, and then can they take that next step and really compete for a national title when they get there? You know, they've had a couple early exits from the College World Series, and so they're trying to take that last step, and she's obviously a really big part of that.
Now, one of the things we learned, and you wrote about it, despite all her accomplishments and success as a senior, they decided to kind of tweak her approach to pitching. I mean, you said for her, she struggled a bit, got hit, wasn't the usual dominator most had come to expect. But what did they do or adjust or maybe add to her repertoire?
Yeah. And so, I mean, you look at the numbers, she still had an incredible season. You know, 21-3, ERA of like 2.02. So she had a great season. But the few times that she did struggle, it sounded like she was working through her different pitches. You know, her go-to pitch has always been the rise ball. That's been her number one weapon. And I guess early in the season, her rise ball wasn't moving quite like she had come to expect. And so she was trying to go to some of her secondary pitches and I guess didn't have the confidence in those pitches to be able to throw them aggressively when her go-to pitch wasn't working. So I think the emphasis for her this year has been to develop all of her pitches. And as her rise ball has gotten back on track, then she's been able to mix in some of her other pitches with a little more confidence. And that's the kind of pitcher I think she realized she needed to be. I think she realized you can't just be a one-pitch pitcher. and expect to get hitters out at the highest level, you know, the competition that they're going to see potentially in the College World Series.
Well, let's get over to Pac-12 baseball. We're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. It's been a very disappointing season so far for the Ducks. A lot of talk about finally getting over the hump, making it to Omaha. But overall, when you look at preseason expectations for this league, what are some of, I guess, the team performances or facts that have presented themselves that have this thing, I guess an accurate term would be a little topsy-turvy?
Yeah, it's been totally upside down this year in Pac-12 baseball. The rule of thumb is the teams that had big expectations going into the season have underachieved, and the teams that had no expectations have overachieved. And so everybody basically meets in the middle, and that gives you the standings you have now, which are totally muddled. The team in first place has a losing record overall in Utah, which is a team that had finished last the last 4 years. Nobody expected Utah to be a team in the race at the end of the season. And so it has been a disappointing season for Oregon, no question. They were talking about Omaha again and, you know, hoping this would be the breakthrough year, and they've ended up taking another step back. But they're certainly not the only team in the Pac-12 that feels like this year is a missed opportunity. Just look at Oregon State. You know, they were ranked number three early in the year, and now they're going to have to win some games just to make the NCAA tournament.
Final thought, you quoted George Horton in today's piece. Some of the aspects of this team he talked about that have come up a little bit short. But despite all that, I mean, he still thinks they have a shot to make it to a regional?
Yeah, you know, they're clinging to hope. This has really drug out a long time. I feel like their postseason hopes have really been on life support for about the last 6 weeks. But yet, because the Pac-12 is so wide open, they still have that little glimmer of hope that if they get really hot at the end of the season, that maybe they could win the Pac-12 and get a bid. I don't think it's very likely. I haven't really seen anything from Oregon lately that says this is a team that's getting ready to rattle off six straight wins and win the Pac-12. But until somebody really takes charge of the Pac-12, then a lot of teams are in that position where they feel like if they can get hot down the stretch, they'll maybe have a chance to win the league. So, you know, until Oregon's officially eliminated, they can cling to that. But, you know, I just haven't seen the consistency from them this year that tells you they're getting ready to go on a big hot streak, even though they had a nice series against Oregon State. I mean, taking two out of three from the Beavers, it's been a long time since Oregon did something like that. So that was one good thing that's come from this season for them.
Yeah, especially up at Goss Stadium. All right, good stuff as always. We greatly appreciate your time and input to get us started on a Tuesday. I will not be looking for you out on the links in your newly announced retirement. You have a great week, and we'll catch up with you next Tuesday.
All right. We'll see you, Steve.
Take it easy.